gentlemen, just in time. Welcome to the French Connection. It is a great day to be alive. We have great stuff for you today, and I'm ready to go, guys. We're going to give the bad guys a big black eye today. I have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Kay Griggs. Many of you have probably heard about Kay through her work that she did some years ago. And, you know, she's become quite a cult following around, you know, the truth movements in the United States, because some of the things she said have actually come painfully true for all of us. And some of the connections that what you can make with the Gannon Gate scandal and many of the other things that have been happening in the White House, and you can actually glean those informations from what Kay gave some years ago. And so it's wonderful to have her with me, and I'm going to bring her right up. But first we do that. My name is Daryl Smith, Daryl Bradford Smith. I am The Witness. You can contact me at IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com, or you can go to my website at IamTheWitness.com. And Kay's interview will be downloadable tomorrow on that website. So if you aren't able to listen to everything we say tonight, you can always listen to it later on my website. We're going to go right to Kay right now. Kay, how are you?
I'm just fine.
I'm very happy that you decided to speak with me tonight. And there's so much to talk about. You did so much work with that with Reverend Strawcutter. But I want to give the people a little background on this. You were in a marriage for how many years with a lieutenant colonel?
Well, we were married for a long time, and then he just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And because I started asking too many questions within the group because of his behavior and drinking and so forth, and I wondered how he could have been doing the kinds of things he was doing with the kind of behavior that he had. And so when I started finally reaching out, it got to General Gray and his boys.
Well, so you were married for over a decade or longer?
Yeah. No.
Well, now, so what basically happened? He was in the Marine Corps for how many years at the time that you finally parted company with him?
Well, he told me that he wore different hats and that they didn't really mean anything. In other words, when he was drinking, he talked a lot about what he did. He wanted me to understand his world, because my world was just a Virginian world, naval. All my family had been naval officers and naval intelligence and very straightforward people. Of course, you know, there were things that my grandfather did and that went on that were not quite that way. But he was above the Marine Corps in many ways.
Well, and it's because of his beginnings at Princeton, isn't it? And his relationships with some of the elites where he was educated. Is that not true?
Yeah, but it started when his family worked. His father worked for the mob in Atlantic City, but they were very poor. And when George's immersion began, unbeknownst to him, because he was just a little boy, was at the Hun School in Princeton when he was going into the ninth grade and very poor. And that's where I believe it began, because he was very good looking and very needy, the favorite one in the family. And, of course, going to a fancy boarding school was just, his mother essentially prodded him and he couldn't tell his mother or his family what was being done to him, because so much was put on his shoulders.
And some of the things that were being done actually came back as patterns later on, didn't they? I mean,
absolutely.
Some of the old boy kind of homosexual stuff.
Homosexual group sex.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff actually, in some cases, might be considered by some as, you know, boys testing the waters as they grow. But this is a little bit different, wasn't it?
No, these were older men who were teachers and Germans. And these were men who were using these boys, like the boys at the choir school in Princeton, for their own sexual purposes.
Okay. And that, and so basically what we've got there is predatory behavior on the part of the people leading the group,
mm-hmm.
And then victims down the chain. Now, at some point when he went into the military, he found himself either profiled on the way in, or they kind of knew he was coming, didn't they?
Well, lots of boys were done, like my husband Oswald was one. Many of them are done that way, but I believe, and I know at least in Norfolk, that the predatory homosexual wealthy rings at the ports. You know, you have the guy in California who went around and murdered the guys, ending it with Versace.
Mm-hmm.
You have two naval officers. In other words, these boys, like that guy, like Oswald, like my husband, like so many of them, some of them, like George, who are given a high school education and a college education like that, are very different from the Oswalds and the young guy.
By Oswald, you mean Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yes.
Huh.
They were not given college, and yet they were very bright, and they were picked out as quote-unquote rising stars because they were eager and so forth. And my husband was given special treatment because he had some family people in New Jersey, and they sent his parents away for 8 solid years to California to get to a Boy Scout camp right near the Presidio to get rid of his parents so that they could really work on him. And he, of course, was with the 3 older Saudi royals. There was an intention there to get him in with certain people. Admiral Kimmel's son was there. There were the Coors, you know, brother, and so forth. And they really got him mind-controlled while he was at the Hun school. And then he got this, because he was good with this homosexual guy, Paddock, and Alex Robertson, and the other ones who were involved with giving him private airplane lessons, you know, and just the same kind of thing that David Ferry and Clay Shaw did with Oswald and the other boys in the, the civilian air group. They use that as a way of recruiting them.
Well, so now what we find is he almost automatically ends up being driven into a particular career, and that particular career brought him into the military, and more specifically the Marine Corps. And his role was to be what specifically? We've got a break coming up, Kay. You know what? When we come back from the break, maybe we can talk about his specific role in the Marine Corps and how it worked when you arrived on the scene. Ladies and gentlemen, Kay Griggs, don't go anywhere. It's Daryl Bradford Smith on The French Connection. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right back into our talk right here. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. You're listening to The French Connection. You can go to my website at IamTheWitness.com or contact me at IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com. Kay, I want to go right back to what we were talking about just now. I mean, his selection of the Marine Corps, he started out
select it. It was given to him through this ROTC program at Princeton, but it was actually under the Army.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
Well,
his group within the Marine Corps is actually controlled by the Army, and he called it joint. He kept calling it. It was almost as if it was a different thing than the Joint Chiefs of Staff, although it worked with it, but it was involved with the Department of State and with an office that they call Plans and Policy, but it was really about operations, which were meant to destabilize countries.
Okay, so he going into this had already been a victim of mind control.
Totally.
Yeah. Now, what did he mean by the existentialists?
Well, that was, you know, being a Protestant Christian and a really strong, you know, having been myself to Episcopal girls' schools, but having had two wonderful grandmothers who were, I mean, and a wonderful father, I understood and understand what being honest and truthful and brave, courageous is all about. And but my husband was—he was trying to explain everything to me. And when he was drinking, that was the only time he could talk. And he drank a lot in order to get it all out, I think, to me. And so he really gave me his heart, the truth, and. I mean, I really feel very sorry for him. There's no retribution or, you know, it is, because he represents, as Oswald did, a very pathetic kind of person. So he kills people and kills people on orders. And that was the thing that disturbed me at the dinner table was just, you know, when he would talk about killing, neutralization or whatever term he used, and I would say, but, you know, isn't that wrong? I mean, you know, he said no. He said it's not because if there's no emotion involved. And then he told about how he was a teenager and how he was put in a car and they went by and did drive cold kills and, you know, and he said it was really doing those African Americans or whatever they, you know, standing on the street corner a favor because they weren't going to do anything with their
life. So he was a teenager getting rid of people, snuffing people. That
well, I don't know how many, but I know he did some. And I know
With whom?
His mentors. His handlers as a teen. And the thing was that he was not in charge. I mean, it was like a gang, only these were very high-level people in his life and in the world. I mean, let's face it, the Saudi royals were in the same class with him. And this group in Great Britain, which is the Russell Trust, was directly involved with all of this because they bought the mansion for the Hun School, which was started by these existentialist Germans, this Oppenheimer-Einstein group of men who were at a place called the Institute, and they and the boys would party with them. And the point is that that there were rompings, you know, within the Russell House.
Are these the Pink Triangle boys?
Yeah,
that came over? These are them.
They are. And the thing is, I know about all that because my grandfather knew all about it. He was involved with, he was a doctor who was involved with naval intelligence, and my grandmother told me that the CCC and all of those things were really, they had Germans who were coming in and pretending they were CCC, and it was just, it was like a big cover.
CCC.
Yeah, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And they were at places like Fort Hunt, where Pinochet was, and where Galen, all these guys, Roosevelt had sort of, Teddy had sort of started all this stuff. And, you know, I sort of have a theory that he got rid of McKinley, Teddy's group. But, you know, that's just something.
Well, so what we get to now, we get to your...
Assassination teams that are actually boys that are brought in because they have a certain psychological profile. No money, no daddy, or they get rid of daddy and mommy, and they're ripe to have a mentor like
Bill Clinton.
Well,
Bill had no father.
But I don't think Bill Clinton ever murdered anybody. You see,
Vince Foster might argue with that fact, but the fact
himself,
is,
I mean, you know, to do it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. But, I mean, they groomed Bill because they brought him from his small beginnings. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go back with Kay in a moment. I do have a question about that because this is important. Rhodes Scholar for Poverty and meeting the president as a young man. And ladies and gentlemen, lots more to come with Kay Griggs. This is Don't Go Anywhere Listening Radio. Stick with us. Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Gerald Bradford Smith, French Connection. I am the witness. .com is the website. You can go there. All kinds of news events and downloads and books available. In fact, you can get the Kay Griggs Talks, 8 hours of discs on that site. You can get a link to it anyway, Kay. We have some of the 8 hours you did some years ago available through that site, in fact. It's amazing the kind of impact that has had over the years. But I was making a point about Bill Clinton having been groomed. I mean, the gentleman came from humble beginnings, but he ended up as a Rhodes Scholar, and you know, he lived a quite a charmed life. Georgetown, which you know is the center hotbed of preparing spies for their work later on. And so what we got here is maybe he was groomed for a different job, but he was still being handled.
Well, I think that it's just the model that they use, the template. It's Masonic. All the beauty pageants are sort of originated like the Neptune's Festival with high-level Masons within a community. I was assistant director of the Chamber of Commerce here, and we put on the Neptune Festival and had high-level business people on the board. And before I married George, I started seeing the way the Masons and the Opus Dei and, you know, B'nai B'rith, these groups kind of merged in a Shriner sort of level. And the point is that you, at each port city, whether it's San Diego or Miami or New Orleans or Norfolk or Brooklyn, you have the same group kind of individuals who pretty much milk the military system, prostitution and so forth, and cover up for the perversion and criminal activity that's going on, so that it feeds them and in other words, they feed off the system like parasites.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have bottom feeders and poor boys who see somebody driving a big car and or chains or whatever it is, and these men, I call them sort of little men from Oz or bunker boys, because none of them have any courage. They have no courage. They're, you know, most of them are cowards or bullies, and they see a good looking teenage boy coming who's 6 feet tall, he's good looking, he's smart, and they actually think, you know, like a man who wants a prostitute, how can I use this guy to satisfy me? And, you know, like you do a racehorse, I mean, these, or a dog. So it's, these people.
Kay, we've got a several-minute break where you can stretch your leg a little bit. It's
okay.
We've got to put on the ABC fake news, you know, because they always put a rotation of all the lies George tells. And then we'll come back and we'll do a bunch more. And ladies and gentlemen,